Justice Brennan, we'll hear arguments first this morning in Karcher, the Speaker of the New Jersey Assembly, against Daggett. Mr. Guido, you may proceed whenever you're ready.
New Jersey Legislature and the Democratic members of Congress in this case. This case is an appeal from the judgment of a divided three-judge district court in New Jersey, which struck down a congressional reapportionment plan enacted by the New Jersey legislature. On January 19, 1982, New Jersey enacted a reapportionment plan for the election of United States House of Representatives, with a deviation that falls within the statistical imprecision of the census data. The plan, in accordance with the notification from the clerk of the House of Representatives, based on the 1980 decennial census data, reduced the number of districts from 15 to 14. The plan, as enacted, creates 14 districts with an average population deviation of 0.135%, and a maximum deviation between the smallest and largest districts of less than 0.7%. The legislature's criteria for redistricting was first numerical equality. The leadership agreed that no plan would be considered with deviations over 1% and that lesser deviations would be sought. Additional legislative criteria, which were to be secondary to population equality, were to protect minority interests by not unnecessarily diluting black votes, particularly in the 10th or the Newark district. The others were to preserve the cores of existing districts as much as possible for all members of the legislature, and to preserve municipal boundaries, which in New Jersey, because there are so many of them, are small enough to be building blocks for reapportionment purposes. Plaintiffs, including all the incumbent Republican members of Congress, on February 2nd and 9, 1982, brought suit to declare this statute unconstitutional because they believed other plans submitted to the legislature would have reduced the variation between districts to even lower levels than the 0.7% in this case. The cases were consolidated and submitted on depositions, affidavits, and exhibits without trial upon the agreement of all parties to this action. On March 3, 1982, the three-judge district court, by a divided vote, declared the statute unconstitutional. The court read Kirkpatrick and White, the decisions of this court, as requiring any legislatively drafted congressional redistricting plan to be held unconstitutional if there existed the possibility that a plan with a smaller deviation of census population might be developed. The court concluded that such a possibility existed in this case and struck down the statute. In doing so, the court failed to consider the problems undisputed in the record with each of the plans rejected by the legislature. The court also gave little, if any, consideration to other criteria, such as preventing the dilution of minority voting strength in certain districts. The court concluded that preventing racial dilution did not justify the deviations because the district with the largest black vote, District 10, was not one of those with the highest deviation. And finally, the district court rejected the appellant's argument that the as nearly as practicable standard of Kirkpatrick and White is satisfied when the population deviation is even less than the statistical imprecision of the census. circuit.
Do we really know what the statistical deviation is or variance from the census figures? Do we really have anything to go by?
What we have in this case is we have the statement of Dr. Trussell, who is a demographer at Princeton, an expert demographer, and a noted authority on the census. In fact, he participated in all of the studies of the census data.
And well, it was my understanding, though, that there was no real consensus, if you will, on what the most recent census variation might be, and if there is such a variation, people have spoken in national terms, which wouldn't necessarily focus it on that.
That's
state
right. Dr.
Or that
Trussell
district.
Is the only one who has focused that on districts as small as congressional districts or at the state level. If I may return to my argument. The Circuit Judge Gibbons dissented. He concluded that where the deviation between the districts is less than the recognized margin of error, a good faith effort on the part of the legislature to achieve numerical equality has been shown as a matter of law. And courts in such situations should not substitute their judgment for that of the legislature. The appellants on March 8th filed a notice of appeal and applied for stay of the judgment pending appeal to this court. On March 15th, Justice Brennan stayed the district court's judgment. As Justice Brennan recognized in granting appellants' application for a stay, this appeal presents the question whether the proper interpretation of this, what are the proper interpretations of the standards laid out in Kirkpatrick versus Presley? Do they require absolute equality, or do they allow for some latitude given the arguable statistical insignificant variances argued in this case? In this case, the essence of what we're arguing about is whether a variance of less than 0.7 of 1% is not good enough to satisfy the requirements of Kirkpatrick, Westbury, and White.
Mr. Guido, what does that 0.7 of 1% translate into in terms of people?
In terms of people, it translates into a deviation of approximately, I think it's 3,551 people between the largest and the smallest. That is much different than in the figures that were in Westbury, for example. In Westbury, it was 140% deviation, or 551,000 people. In Kirkpatrick, the deviation was 5.97%, or 25,000 people. In White, it was 4.13, or 19,275 people. The deviations in this case are less than the deviations in 11 other plans adopted in other states and fall within the range of, I think, approximately five other states. At the outset, I think it's important to focus on the appropriate standard of review in this case, because the appellees here and two members of the district court below interpreted the standards of Kirkpatrick and White to mean that a redistricting plan adopted by a state legislature is automatically unconstitutional, no matter how low a deviation it contains, as long as it is possible to conceive of a plan with a lower deviation. This is true, they argue, no matter what flaws there might be in the other plans, and no matter what the statistical imprecision of the underlying census data may be. In reaching this incongruous result, the appellees ignore the admonition of this court in White that from the beginning we have recognized that reapportionment is primarily a matter for legislative consideration and determination. As this court clearly stated, legislatures have primary jurisdiction over legislative reapportionment. And districting inevitably has sharp political impact, and inevitably political decisions must be made by those charged with the task. In balancing the commands of the one-man, one-vote rule of this court against the requirement of the primacy of the legislature, this court has evolved a pragmatic case-by-case approach in litigating these issues. In Westbury, it said, as nearly as is practicable, one man's vote in a congressional district is worth as much as another's. And in elaborating on this standard, this court in Kirkpatrick rejected a fixed percentage formula. Consequently, as this court concluded in White, congressional districts pass constitutional muster if they are as mathematically equal as is reasonably possible. In reading through those cases, the court has focused on a number of factors in applying these standards. The first is the magnitude of the deviation. The court has spoken in Kirkpatrick of markedly reduced deviations. In White, it talked about grossly out of proportion. The court has additionally looked at the accuracy of the data relied upon in drawing the plan. In Kirkpatrick, at page 529, the court mentions the fact that the accuracy of the data can be a factor to be taken into consideration. And on page 22 of our brief, note 17, we point out that the court in Mahan and in Burns versus Richardson recognized that there may even be situations in which the census data does not have to be used because of problems of accuracy. The third factor the court has looked to in determining whether a plan meets constitutional muster is the extent to which the challenged variances fall within the range of what other states have done. I've just pointed out to you where the statute challenge in this plan falls with regard to other states. Additionally, the fourth factor has been the availability of acceptable alternatives, in which we will address in a minute, and the extent to which there exists legitimate justifications for the deviations. In all of the cases that this court has decided since Baker versus Carr, it has never stricken a plan with a variance as low as in this case. As I said, the variances in this case are nowhere near those of Westbury, Kirkpatrick, and White.
But was the position of the court that there were other plans, but they still smaller variation?
That's correct, Your Honor. And that we will address is the question of the inadequacies of those plans. If you wish me to address that now.
I'm patiently with
you. Okay. In reviewing court-drawn plans, which this court holds to a higher one-man, one-vote standard than legislatively drawn plans, this court has upheld plans with similar deviations to that plan challenged in this action, out of deference to the legislature, although it holds court-drawn plans to a higher one-man, one-vote standard. Significantly, the plan approved after this court's decision, striking the statute in Kirkpatrick, contained a deviation of 0.629%. In essence, the same deviation challenged in that action. That occurred in a case where the court imposes a higher standard under the one-man, one-vote principle on courts when they draw the plans than on legislatures. However, it sustained the plan with a similar deviation. The other factor that the court has considered is the precision of the data that's to be relied upon. As we point out in our brief, the record in this case reveals that the census count is not perfect. It is not an entirely accurate enumeration of the population. Its imprecision is due not only to the undercounting of illegal aliens, as the appellees contend, but also to the undercounting of other groups, people under 35, people over 65, in migration, out migration in certain
areas. Is there proof to that effect in the record?
Pardon?
Is there proof to that effect in the record?
In the record, yes. Dr. Trussell's statement supports that, and all of the attachments that are included with that include all of the studies that have been done by the Census Bureau on that issue. And they're all exhibits as attachments to his statement.
And yet you structure your own apportionment on the census figures.
On the census figures, that's correct, Your Honor. Since those were the only figures that were available, and the state of the legislature in New Jersey attempted to get to as close to zero as possible, even though recognition that there was an error factor in those figures, and in recognition of the fact that there was no way, as a practical matter, to make corrections for those deviations. What we're arguing here is, even though that can't be done, this court, as a matter of constitutional law, should recognize that it shouldn't require something to be done by the legislature that is essentially physically impossible. They took the best available data that was available to them. They used that data. That data has imprecision, and it's now being attacked because they didn't come close enough to zero, when in fact no one knows that if we drew a plan that had absolutely zero census population deviation, that it wouldn't be in reality a plan with a substantially higher deviation than the 0.7 of 1%.
Is there any finding by the district court that it did or did not credit Dr. Trussell's testimony?
In the district court, the dissenting judge relied upon that information. But the district court said with regard, the two other members of the district court said with regard to that is that essentially here, this is the argument that had been made in Kirkpatrick in earlier cases, and therefore as a matter of law, we're disregarding this argument.
Counsel, have you finished answering that question?
Yes, sir.
I want to ask you another one. Which of those districts is contiguous only for yachtsmen, as the dissenting judge suggested?
I think it's the second one. Seems to be down into this area. It also turns out, Your Honor,
I didn't quite hear you.
Because of the nature of that district, if you look at it, and you
yes.
look at sort of everything else, even if you made that district square, you would still have to get across that spit by being a yachtsman. It turns out that
Two bodies of water that have to be crossed?
Pardon?
Are there two bodies of water or only one?
It would have to be. There's one body of water. My understanding.
What is it?
And that.
What's the body of water?
Pardon?
What is the body of water?
I'm not certain of the body of water.
I'll ask Mr. Hellring.
Okay. Mr. Hellring, presumably no. But the reality is that even if you drew the district as square, you would still have to, at certain times, be a yachtsman to cross it.
Does any district prior to 1980 have that problem?
At that time, Your Honor.
Prior to this redistricting.
I don't know the answer to that, Your Honor. I do not think that that was the case prior.
Right.
Prior to 1980, except for the spit that's referred to by the dissenting judge.
How many of those districts have any genuine community of interest?
In all of these districts?
How many of them have genuine community of interest, either economic, social, or political?
Well, Your Honor, it's my understanding, and Justice Brennan is probably much more familiar with the state of New Jersey than I am.
Well, I think in Kirkpatrick,
there were attempts that the basic goals in this case were to maintain essentially the core districts from the 1970 census, and that that essentially reflected the communities of interest at that time, in recognition of the fact that there needed to be changes because there was a loss of the district. All of those factors, Your Honor, I think, as I listed and enumerated at the beginning, maintaining the core districts meant that there was an attempt to preserve the communities of interest that have been reflected in the 1970 reapportionment as drawn by the district court previous to that time.
Mr. Guido, is Is that green district that's by Asbury Park and Long Branch, and is that all one district?
This green district is all one district.
And then the same district isn't extended
correct.
Up to the light green north of the body of water.
It's different than this.
Well, the numbers on there, aren't they, Mr. Good?
Yeah, but I can't see the numbers.
Number 8 is the one, isn't it?
This here is all one district.
Okay, thank you.
And essentially, one of the things I think you have to understand is if you look back at the appendix, you look at this map and you say, well, you look at these districts and they have these sort of puzzle kind of shapes. The reality is that in New Jersey, the building blocks that were used were municipalities because of the community of interest concern, and they're putting together those building blocks in such a way. There were sufficient numbers of them so that you could satisfy the population equality requirement. And as a consequence, because you use those boundaries, you end up with a map that looks like this. At one time, I went back and looked at all of the maps that have been drawn over time in New Jersey, and I can tell you that if you seem to think that this, if anyone thinks that this is a strange map, they've always been strange maps in this regard in New Jersey, primarily because municipalities were used as the building blocks. Two is that you have a state with sort of an irregular shape, and three with a very high population. And so as a consequence, you end up with a map that...
Did Kirkpatrick say the community of interest was relevant at all in cases of this kind?
In Kirkpatrick, no, it did not.
It said affirmatively that...
We're not even arguing the communities of interest is relevant. What we're arguing here is that essentially the statistical imprecision of the census data was such that it justifies holding that this plan is the functional equivalent of zero, and we're arguing that if the minute deviation in this case is not justified by an acceptance of that statistical imprecision, that the concern for the minority interests are sufficient to justify that deviation.
But Judge Gibbons said minority interest was pretextual in this case, didn't he?
Your Honor, what the court said in this case about the minority interests
My question was
that essentially there was no connection. They couldn't find a lineal connection between the 10th district and the 4th district, the concerns for minority interests were affected, and the deviations that were in this case. As a practical matter, when you look at this map, it is impossible after the fact to construct the causal connection between minority interests and the interests here. Is that the only thing that you can do to make a judgment about whether the legislature appropriately took into consideration minority interests was whether the plan that was adopted by the legislature better met the minority concerns than the other plans before the legislature. And as we have argued in our brief and demonstrated, that the plans that were relied upon by the district court, two of which didn't even exist at the time that the statute challenge in this case was adopted, did not meet the interest of minority interest, and that Mayor Gibson, who was the major minority leader in the state, was actively lobbying for the statute passed in this case and actively lobbying with the legislators against this plan. And in fact, no plan would have been adopted without the vote of minority members of the legislature, and it was this plan that they felt best represented their interests.
I want to be sure about Mr. Guido, I want to be sure about one thing. I believe Justice Powell referred to it. All three members of the panel below agreed on the pretextual aspect of the preservation of minority.
All three members of the panel below rejected the argument. That's
all
correct.
Three agreed it was pretextual.
I'm not so sure. I remember one of them using the word pretextual, Your Honor, but I will concede that point for purposes of the argument. And that the basis that they did so was is that they said no one could develop a lineal connection between the deviations and the concern for minority voting strength in this case. Yes, Your Honor, and that we believe that conclusion, that there was a requirement than in a reapportionment case, especially with a deviation of 0.7 of 1%, is a requirement that leaves no deference to the legislature as required by this court in Upham and in White. And that if there is to be any deference to the legislature, the test should be take a look at the plans that were before the legislature and compare those to the plan that's before this being challenged to decide whether or not that interest was adequately protected.
May I ask one question about the lack of compactness of the districts that Justice Powell alluded to with District 3, I guess it is. It's kind of irregularly shaped. As I remember the Rutgers professor's submission, he included compactness as one of the tests of whether the plan was a satisfactory one. Did the legislature, in drafting this plan, give any attention at all to the desirability of compact districts?
No, what the concern was here was, as I pointed out at the outset,
I understand there were other concerns. Did they include,
that
as give any value at all to that?
In my discussions with them, there were some concerns, but that concern was down the line. There were some people who did mention the question of compactness. But as I said, what it was concern about preservation of municipal boundaries, core constituencies, fairness to minorities, and population equality.
Well, and also, I suppose, preserving the majority control of the legislature.
I would like to save a few minutes for rebuttal now, if I might.
May I ask if that was admittedly one of the concerns?
What?
Preserving majority control of the maximum number of districts possible.
Oh, Democratic majority control?
Yeah.
No, there was some concern by some members that there be fairness to all of the incumbents. In fact, there were discussions with one of the Republicans who was very concerned about his vulnerability. But there also was some concern in drafting the plan about preserving some of the seniority of Democratic members of the legislature.
Mr. Heldren.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court. In striking down the statute which is represented by this exhibit, which was received in evidence by the district court, the court below said that since there were a number of other plans available to the legislature, including several which had been introduced as bills, which had smaller population deviations, and since this redistricting statute was not the unavoidable result of a good faith effort to arrive at the smallest deviations in population, and since the record contained no justification for the population deviation contained in this statute, that it must be declared unconstitutional under the principles enunciated by this court in Westbury and its progeny, Kirkpatrick and White. The record contains no suggestion of any good faith effort, or indeed any effort, to consider other plans with smaller population deviations. There was a justification argued, which was made up later after the suit was started, in which it was suggested by the appellants that they had some minority adjustment problems with respect particularly to one of the districts, and the three judges on the panel below found as a fact that this was a phony, that it was a pretext, that it was an attempt to use a minority argument in order to justify something which had nothing to do with the minority issue, and to use improperly and in an insulting manner the problem of minorities in order to justify a statute which was the result of bad faith. Looking at this picture of the redistricting suggests the word gerrymander. Gerrymander has become a term of obloquy. Since I was in my earliest days in school, I remember being taught about gerrymander. Why do we not like gerrymandering? Why did the dissenting judge below, Judge Gibbons, say that as a citizen of New Jersey, he was disturbed by looking at this exhibit? Because gerrymandering suggests the use of base motive. It suggests that a citizen who votes is wasting his time because his vote has been snaked around in such a way that it will count for very little.
Mr. Hellring, how would you define gerrymandering as you pronounce it?
I would suggest looking at this map and say that twisting District number 7 in such a way that it has come to be known as the Fishhook District is gerrymandering. That having another fishhook in reverse form on the other side.
Well, you might call number 4 a running back district too, I guess. That kind of. But what does that amount to for purposes of our cases? Our cases don't say flatly that you can't have a district shaped like a fish hook or like a running back.
In answer to Your Honor's question, I think this is what it means under the cases decided by this court. This court has thus far said, we will avoid the question of whether gerrymandering in any form and to any extent is by itself unconstitutional. Wells said it on the same day as Kirkpatrick was decided. Justice Brennan said, we're not taking a position one way or the other. There have been other instances in which that issue has been avoided. It need not be dealt with in this case in order to sustain the decision below on a constitutional basis, but it fits in anyway, in the following manner.
Good to use an oral.
Kirkpatrick says that a population deviation is no good if it is the unavoidable, is no good unless it is the unavoidable result of a good faith effort to arrive at the lowest possible population deviation. This shows lack of good faith because the gerrymandering is so extreme, so tortured, that it is one piece of evidence, not necessarily absolutely conclusive, but surely evidence of bad faith.
Does gerrymandering mean that the district has been drawn for ulterior political motives?
Yes, it does. We respect straight lines. Crooked lines we don't like. The people who do the voting find that crooked lines, which are tortured in such a way to embarrass two congressmen into running against each other, to put the homes of two congressmen in the same district by adding a jiggle.
Is that factual?
It is, and it's in the record. This represents a degree of gerrymandering which is so extreme and so far different from anything that's happened before in New Jersey that it itself is evidence of bad faith. Now, I have to talk about bad
you don't
faith.
We don't have any cases in this court that invalidate a gerrymander of the kind that you just described.
We have none. This court has avoided the question. I am not
suggesting...
We
haven't always avoided the question of a gerrymander. We've sustained a political gerrymander. Gaffney against Cummings.
Well, but in that case, you were dealing with not a congressional redistricting.
Well, I know, but the way you talk, it would make no difference whether it's state or federal.
Well,
gerrymander is a bad... We like straight lines, not crooked lines. And drawing districts for political purposes is a base purpose.
Justice White...
I'll get Gaffney against Cummings held quite to the contrary.
Not in a congressional redistricting case, and this court has expressed repeatedly the importance
of
maintaining...
So you don't think that the political gerrymander... You concede the political gerrymander in the Gaffney against Cummings didn't violate the Equal Protection Clause.
Your Honor, please, I'm not arguing that case. This is a congressional redistricting case.
Are you making a constitutional argument?
No. I'm making an argument under Kirkpatrick.
Well, are you making a constitutional argument or a statutory argument?
I'm making an argument.
Well, is it constitutional or not?
It is not a constitutional
argument. What is it?
It is an argument that under Kirkpatrick.
Well, what's Kirkpatrick?
Kirkpatrick is a statement by this court on the meaning of Article 1, Section 2 of the United States Constitution when it says that the members of the House of Representatives shall be elected by the people. Senators...
Well, so you are making a constitutional argument.
Well...
But not an equal protection argument.
Well, if Your Honor, please, I am not making an equal protection argument. And my argument about gerrymandering is a constitutional argument only in the sense that it relates to the issue of good faith as that is given to us by the United States Supreme Court in testing, for the purpose of testing, whether a given population deviation in a given statute is or is not the unavoidable result of a good faith effort to arrive at the smallest possible population deviation. And I would suggest, Justice White, that if this court is ready to deal with gerrymandering all by itself as a constitutional issue and sees the necessity of doing so in this case, that it's a perfect case for you to do it in.
You achieved absolute equality. You took the very lowest plan there was, and you still had fishhook and running back districts, and they still were in that form for political purposes.
But you wouldn't have.
You wouldn't have.
Mr. Ryok suggested a plan more than 6 months before, or 6 months before this one was adopted, in which there wasn't any such gerrymandering, and it was based solely on the problems of population deviation without doing any harm to compactness or state interests or anything else. And it didn't put congressmen running against each other or anything else. But if Your Honor, please, I am not suggesting that it's necessary for this court to find gerrymandering as a concept to be an unconstitutional thing. That may come in a later case. If you want to do it in this case, it's a good case to do it in, but you don't need to. This case can be well determined and upheld and affirmed solely on the basis that the population deviation here was not the unavoidable result of a good faith effort to arrive at the smallest population deviation. And if Your Honor, Justice White, means to suggest that the smallest population deviation is not necessarily the most desirable, then I think the court would have to be ready to change its ideas about one man, one vote.
Or change one its ideas if Kirkpatrick is to be and White against Weezer is supposed to be read that way, they ought to cut into those two cases.
Well, may I then suggest, Your Honor, that if there's any addition to be made by this court in this case by way of further explanation of the meaning of Article 1, Section 2, by way of further discussion as to what Kirkpatrick may not have said enough times, and what Your Honor, Justice White, said in White against Weiser wasn't said enough times, then it seems to me that this court should take the occasion to reemphasize the doctrine of one man, one vote, the cry of happiness and joy and respect that rose up from all parts of this nation at the time of Baker against Carr and Westbury is one of the most stunning juridical acts in this century when the idea of one man, one vote was established. This is surely not the time to go backwards on that. 3,607...
You're not saying that was unanimous, are you?
Pardon me, sir?
You're not saying that that was unanimous all over the country, are you?
Your Honor has me there. As a matter of fact, I know it wasn't even unanimous on this court. Mr. Justice Harlan didn't agree with it. Another great justice, your teacher, Mr. Justice Brennan, and mine, Mr. Justice Frankfurter, thought it was a silly thing to get involved in the political thicket of it. I'm well aware that great principles are not necessarily brought to light on a unanimous basis. And I do hope that that great principle will not be injured by this court now. 3,674 people care whether it's one man, one vote, particularly in the 4th District, where they have 2,261 too many, and in the 6th District, where they have 1,500 or so too few, totaling a difference between them of 3,674. That's people. And in a state of New Jersey, where in the last gubernatorial election, the present governor sits because he had a plurality of 1,700 votes.
May I ask you...
And that's in the whole state.
May I ask you two questions about your gerrymandering argument and the base motive that you described to the dominant party in trying to have as many districts of the same political flavor. Supposing you had two plans of equal population disparity, I mean, equally satisfied the one-person, one-vote rule, and equally compact, but you could demonstrate by evidence that the majority selected one because they thought they would elect more of their fellow Republicans or Democrats by that plan rather than the other. And they were frank about it. They said, we're in control, we might as well take advantage of our control. Would you say that was unconstitutional?
I would not. That would be a constitutional act. And it should not be struck down under Kirkpatrick or White or Westbury.
Let me give you a second case, then. Supposing you have this plan here, and the court holds it unconstitutional, say, go back to the drawing boards, and the legislature goes back and is able to achieve population equality to the very last digit by doing some more gerrymandering. And that then comes back with no numerical problem, but the kind of distortion, or even a more severe distortion, we see here. Would you say that was constitutional?
Well, first of all,
That would be a second.
And they frankly say the reason is the same as in my other
case. Yes, that would be a second effort by the legislature, not by the court.
That's right.
Well, in such a case where the population deviation were zero, then it should be held constitutional and not struck down unless this court is ready to say that we will consider whether gerrymandering alone in its most extreme form
I want your answer. I don't want you to rephrase my question.
But under the law
rephrasing my question.
Under the law that exists today, it's a constitutional act.
You say it would be?
Yes.
And you think that's what Gaffney decides?
Well, as to reapportionment, it's certainly...
See, there was an attempt to achieve rough parity between the parties, not to
yes.
have one exploit
yes.
its dominance.
Yes, yes. And I think that's, while the facts are different, that's generally the concept of Gaffney, which Justice White mentioned.
And would you have described Gaffney as a gerrymander? I know as he does, but would you have? Because you're the one who brought the term up during
yes.
the argument.
Yes. I don't remember the exact torturing that was done in that, the exact amount of gerrymandering that was done there, but I would not, based upon my recollection of that case and the description
of what
was done.
The objective there was to achieve rough parity between
yes,
the parties.
No, I would not consider that gerrymandering.
But the lines were drawn on with political motivations in mind.
Well, if Your Honor, please.
Well,
political motivations.
Weren't they?
Yes. And political yeah. motivations
well,
are nothing that I object
to. Well, then they argue
to.
About what a gerrymander is.
Yes. Well, I didn't say that a gerrymander was something which was describable purely because it was something done for political motivations. We have political
well,
motivations
if it's
all
done,
day long.
Oh, I know, but if it's done deliberately to make sure that a Republican rather than a Democrat is elected in this district, now, is that would you call that a gerrymander
you
or
see,
not? Would you call that a gerrymander or not?
It depends upon what it did to the people. You see,
well,
it isn't.
It made sure that the Democrats in the particular district were going to lose every time.
But you see, if it twists and turns and squeaks and makes peculiar lines bad enough in order to prevent people in a certain section from having a chance to vote in the place where they have normally been voting, solely to change the result, and that's the purpose and that's the result, that's a sign of bad faith.
Mr.
I don't
Helring,
say that it's
so
enough
gerrymander's
for unconstitutionality.
Your kind of a gerrymander has to have the element of bad faith in it.
No, it has to have the element of destroying what is normal for purposes which are bad.
Well, Mr. Helring, it sounds to me like your argument concedes that every party in power, when drawing district lines, can and will try to benefit its own party members in drawing those lines. But your concern is with the compactness or neatness of the lines that are drawn, forming resulting districts that are more compact. Is that right?
Well, I'd like to say it's
and
all
to what extent
right. like
do we have to require compact districts?
I'd like to say that I agree with everything Your Honor put in Your Honor's question. And I agree with almost all of it, except the word neatness. I'm not looking for neatness. This is so far...
Are you looking for compactness?
Reasonable compactness. I'm looking for something which is not so unreasonable.
Is that a constitutional requirement in these redistricting? Compactness.
Not yet. This Court has never said that it is. And all I am arguing with respect to gerrymandering in this case before this Court today is that it demonstrates that there was no good faith effort by this legislature to arrive at the lowest population deviation and that this was not the result of the unavoidable result.
Well, let me ask you another question. Suppose the legislature had before it two plans with very minor population differences, one slightly higher than the other. What possible justifications do you agree the Constitution would permit to be considered for the legislature to adopt the plan with a slightly higher deviation and still be acceptable? Our court has suggested, for example, anticipated population shifts would justify it.
That was in Kirkpatrick.
Our court has suggested protecting incumbents is a possible justification. Is there any other justification in your view?
Well, I think there could be others. None that have ever been suggested, so far as I know, have as yet been acceptable to this court.
Would Those you two- propose that any others should be?
Compactness in the sense of avoiding extremes in gerrymandering.
So that would it would one. Be your view that if the higher deviation were more compact on the map, that that would be a justification for the higher deviation?
Based on degree. If the degree of gerrymandering were very, very different, then I would say that would be an acceptable reason and an important reason. Gerrymandering, of course, partakes of some of these other things that Your Honor referred to, such as avoiding contests between two incumbent representatives and things of that sort. It's part of the seamless web of all of the reasons that go into the determinations made by a legislature.
Is it your view that protection of municipal or district boundaries is that should permit a higher?
It is, but I know that this court has so far not accepted that as a valid ground. I would urge it upon this court. It isn't necessary to argue that in order to win this case and have it affirmed by this court. But the answer to Your Honor's question is yes, I would consider that to be a very important and valid consideration for a court to take into consideration. Now, appellants have enjoyed in this case at all levels, including this court, to talk about population deviations which are within the limits of the statistical imprecisions of the census, which makes them equal to zero. If that has any meaning at all, and I suggest it does not, then it can only mean that any population deviation which already is created by the legislature in adopting a particular redistricting plan has got to be a much greater population deviation if you superimpose upon it and add to it the statistical imprecision of any census, no matter what that statistical imprecision may be. Now, if the statistical imprecision somewhere up on high in the omnipresent sky, which we don't know what it is less than 0.7%, as the population deviation here is, then their argument falls for that reason. But if it's more, let's say if it's 1%, or 1.5%, or as was largely studied 8 or 9 years after the 1970 census, a statistical imprecision of 2.6%, supposedly. If it's that high, then you got to add about 12 to 15,000 people to the 3,674 people by which you already have a population deviation. So that this argument about population deviations within the confines of statistical imprecisions of the census is backwards. Because if you strive for zero population deviation, it may very well be that because of the statistical imprecisions of any census in the nature of things, there would anyway be some kind of a deviation. But why strive for anything different from zero? If you strive for a 1% de minimis under the argument of statistical imprecision, then the cases before you will then say, why not 1.3, why not 1.4? Why 1%, why not 1%, 2%, 3%, 4%, 6%? Where do we stop? The right answer is one man, one vote. 3,674 is too many, unless it is the result, the unavoidable result, of a good faith effort. A good faith effort, not this, on the part of a legislature in adopting a redistricting plan. In this case, there has been no showing of good faith. The court below annexed to its opinion what it called a remarkable document, which was a letter from the Speaker of the Assembly to Dr. Riok of Rutgers University in response a few days after Dr. Riok sent his proposed lowest population deviation plan to all the members of the legislature. He got a letter from Speaker Jackman, which they call a remarkable document, and which says, you're silly if you think that we're going to pay attention to population deviation as the main event. We're realistic legislators, and we know we've got the power now because we've got a Democratic House and a Democratic Senate and a Democratic governor, and we're going to get it before he leaves office. And on the day that the Democratic governor left office, minutes before he left office, he signed this bill for the purpose of accomplishing the objectives which are described in Speaker Jackman's letter, which is annexed to the decision of the court below and which is before your honors. This was coupled by the testimony of the majority leader of the assembly, who says, it's population deviation small, that's an aspiration somewhere. That's not the real thing we've got to consider. A letter by another assemblyman to his constituents and to other important leaders in the state, in his party, saying, now this new statute that's been adopted, there's talk about changing it, let's get behind it because you know what it does for us. Never mind the population deviation question being at its lowest ebb. These are clear pieces of evidence in this record alongside of this map to show that instead of a good faith effort, there was a bad faith effort. Thank you.
Do you have anything further, Mr. Guido? You have 3 minutes remaining.
After listening to the appellee's argument, I'm a bit curious of whether or not this case is about population and equality, or whether it's about gerrymandering or some sort of set of statutory standards about compactness or whatnot. There have been references to straight lines or crooked lines in the arguments of the appellees. And I would like to just address the court to page 17 of the joint appendix to take a look at the lines that Mr. Riok's map, which is stressed so heavily, has there. Those lines may not be as dramatic as these lines, but I think that if you look at all of the maps through the joint appendix, you'll see crooked lines and not what are traditionally compactness that you may find in other states because of the nature of the population and its distribution. I'd also like to address the question of partisanship that's being maintained here. It's uncontroverted in the record. I think it's at the appendix on page 83, paragraph 8 of Mr. Karcher's statement, which he says they were concerned with the preservation of cores of pre-existing districts were practicable, and that discussions in a November 1981 meeting included discussions of various interests of incumbent congressmen, both Republican and Democrat. There is no finding in the district court below that there was partisan gerrymandering in this case, and the record doesn't support any such claim. There was no allegation in the complaint to that effect. And in fact, the election results belie any suggestion. All incumbents but one were reelected in this district. And as the record shows, people were aware that the one seat that was be lost could be attributable to Millicent Fenwick running for the Senate so that none of the incumbents would be hurt. Everyone knew that some members of Congress would move because the district lines had to be changed because they wanted to be closer to their core constituencies. That's what the record shows about partisan gerrymandering, which is allegedly the claim of bad faith in this case. In addition, I think that the court should recognize that this case isn't a case about, quote, good faith. It's about a good faith effort to achieve population equality. The appellees in this case have nowhere shown that even if partisan factors were at play here, that they had any connection to the population variations that exist in this case. And as this court has repeatedly stressed, most recently in Rogers versus Lodge and Mobile versus Bolden, is that you can make some allegations about motive, you can make allegations about certain things, but you sure better show a connection between that and the harm claim. And the harm in this case is in
One very brief question on the compactness problem and the study, the Rutgers study that you called our attention to. The professor has a table which he talks about the degree of compactness for each of his districts. Is there anything in the record that tells us the degree of compactness of your
district? No, Your Honor. And the other thing is that there are probably 15 definitions of compactness if you read the literature on reapportionment. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted. We'll hear arguments next.